opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
Do I have some stories for you this week on the Rusty Satellite Show? It's the weekly podcast that's home to some of the most interesting people in the Ville. I'm Rick Redding, your host. I'm glad to be doing this. I'm really got a lot to be excited about this week. It's really been a great week. I launched, and I'll tell you a little bit about this later, but for the first time, we launched a new podcast for the J-Town Chamber. And I live in Jeffersontown, about a quarter mile off the middle of the square there, and I'm very involved in things that go on with the chamber out there. And I'm very happy to have gotten this podcast launched. I got to talk with some people. Also, my guests this week are very interesting, and I think if you would tie them together, there is a story of sort of redemption, of being rejected and not getting your way, and then fulfilling and getting to your dream. And that's what we all want to do. I love doing this podcast. I wouldn't say it's my dream, but I really love the fact that I've been able to bring in some revenue and sort of kind of make a living doing this. When you talk to Andrew Harris, he's a very enthusiastic guy at the Stage One, which is really, I really understood it for the first time. It's actors theater for with targeting kids, K through 12. That's what their productions do. And and I learned a little bit this week about the Baumhard Theater. That was very cool because it was originally designed, the Baumhard Theater. Now, I've seen Paul Thorne there. That's where they hold all the Idea Festival events. But that place is it's unique because the seating goes up at a very steep angle. And that was done, believe it or not, I found out this week, because they wanted to make it so that a kindergarten could see over an adult's head and still see the stage. So that's why the Baumhard Theater is like that. That's the kind of thing you don't find out till you actually talk to somebody and learn about it. So that was cool. Also, I got lucky. I made a call to John Veronese, the chef John Veronese, who is a legendary in this town. He's among the top chefs in the city, and he has a big new project called River House down on the Ohio River, a fascinating place, and John's story is a fascinating one. I'm sure you're going to want to hear it and hear directly from John about how the River House came to be and what's planned in the future there. It's just opened. I saw the menu. It looks awesome. I asked him about a couple of menu items. You'll be interested to know. I didn't know he's got octopus and he's got grouper cheeks. This isn't grouper. It's grouper cheeks. So you'll want to stay tuned and hear about that. But first, I got a little story for you. I was driving last week on Watterson Trail on Thursday and going in stop and go traffic, and an unfortunate thing happened. A young lady not paying attention behind me slammed into my bumper at about 5 miles an hour, I would guess. Did some pretty good damage to my Ford Fusion. It was very distressing. It has sidelined me from my ride sharing opportunities to make money for a little bit, but it opened my eyes to a lot of different things, and one of those, I had to go through the insurance thing and take my car over to Indiana to get repaired. It was her fault, so Geico is paying for it, and that's all fine and good. I had to clean out my car, and I had all kinds of stuff in my car that I'd forgotten about or didn't know. And the most surprising thing I found were two pairs of reading glasses. Now, if you're like me, and you get to a certain age, you can't see too well in certain situations, or you need cheaters like I do when I have my contacts in, or you need cheaters just in general to be able to read if you can see well far away. So I'm constantly buying new readers because I constantly misplace them and leave them laying around. A lot of people are in the same shape as I am on this. And so it made me realize how fortunate I am to be able to go to the Eye Care Institute. It's over on Story Avenue, 589-1500, the Eye Care Institute. If you have a problem like I do with contacts and seeing up close and seeing far away, you might give them a call over the Eye Care Institute. You can get a you know, the exam that you're required to do anyway if you have contacts, or if you just haven't done it in a year or two, you know, your eyes have likely changed. And because of that, your prescription changes. You may not be seeing as well as it's possible to see. The Eye Care Institute can fix you up right there, 589-1500, and they can also give you some advice on whether you might be a candidate for some eye surgery. And that could help you in the long term see better. So anyway, Eye Care Institute, that's our sponsor, is a sponsor of this show, and I'm glad to have him on board. It's really great. All right, let's get into our first guest, who is John Veronese, the chef John Veronese. If you've been around Louisville for any time, you remember Azaleas. Well, John was a part of that program. He's done a couple other things. He opened his own restaurant, Veronese, in an old gas station on Frankfort Avenue many years ago, and it is one of the most successful places. John's background I learned about in this interview. I won't give it away, but you should listen. It's a very interesting story of how John came to be one of the leading restaurateurs in our city and now has one of the most talked about spots right on the Ohio River. It's next to Kingfish up there if you're not familiar with it. But it was formerly the Fall City Boat Works. It was John told me that hill was created by some backfill from I-71 when they built that a long time ago. So anyway, it's a very interesting story, and I want to get right to it now. Here is my interview with Chef John Veronese.
As a first-time mom, I have to admit, I really didn't know what to expect. But the people at Passport did. Besides covering me and my baby for maternity care and checkups, they offered me extra rewards for things I really needed, like gift cards so I could buy a crib or car seat, and gift cards for groceries and gas. All I had to do to earn these rewards was join their Mommy Steps program for new moms and keep my doctor's appointments, things I was going to do anyway. When they say, we take the time to care, they really mean it. That's why I choose Passport.
Why will you choose Passport? Call 1-800-578-0603. That's 1-800-578-0603. And choose Passport. 1-800-578-0603. Passport Health Plan. We take the time to care.
What a wonderful place I find myself in today with Chef John Veronese at the River House down on the Ohio River. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for coming out today.
What a beautiful location you have here. Everything, it looks perfect. You started this idea of having this restaurant down here in 2001, right?
Yes, I did. Azalea originally brought me to Louisville from Charleston and just found out such a great culinary town this was that is really where I wanted to kind of incubate my career. And when I left Azalea in 2001, I was in search of opening my own restaurant and looking for locations. It's, you know, really, really important. And I was finding a couple spots, and somebody kind of took my spot, my idea, and kind of got really upset. And I'd come down the river just kind of clear my mind. And so I was driving by, I saw this Fort Lee sign, and I was like, that'd be pretty cool, but there's no way I'd ever be able to afford a spot on the river. And I started to drive away, and I was like, you know, I have nothing better to do. Turn around and go talk to these people, and I did. And found out the structure, and, you know, ever since, been working on it in multiple different levels and back and forth and trying to put investment together. And it's such a big spot that most banks and investors, you know, for a first-time operator, like, you're crazy, no way.
Right. Well, you know, I think I've seen in stories about this place the number, but it's how much did you put into it?
We're right now, we're probably around $4 million.
Wow.
And that was even value engineered a little bit. There's things that I would have liked to have done that we're going to have to address later, but we have to make things work now.
And now the River House, I see, is the restaurant. You know, you're still working next door on another, on the levee, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And now how is that going to be different?
Well, the River House is more focused on upscale dining. I call it Southern with an influence on seafood with a raw bar. And the levee, I'm calling small plates with soft seating and nightly entertainment. More focused on the entertainment aspect. So River House is the place to dine. Levee's the place to play, especially when you're on the river.
All right. So you had this opening. Basically over the last week or so, you've been opening River House, right? And now you're going full speed, I guess.
Yeah, it was. Yesterday was my first day of lunch, so we did a week of dinner. This week we got lunch, so we're in full motion right now. The word's out there. People have been waiting for this to happen. People have been waiting to have an upscale dining establishment on the river, and they're excited about it, and they're coming in droves.
Well, they're coming in part because certainly in all this time that you've been in Louisville, you've gained quite a reputation as one of the top chefs in the city, and certainly let's talk a little bit about your other place, which is not closing by any means, right?
No.
Veronese on Frankfort Avenue, is I've been several times, and that just seems to be a thriving spot on the culinary scene, right?
Yeah, no, Veronese is my baby. You know, it's a great place. It's neat that it was able to rehab an old gas station and give it a great feel to it. You know, the retractable door system that we have that, you know, could be inside or out. I mean, shoot, we're in March and 70-degree weather yesterday. I was able to open the doors and have guests enjoy it. It's a great spot. It's doing really well. Business continues to increase, and people really enjoy the experience that we've created there.
Okay. Well, let's go into a little bit of the history of this place. Now, I don't know what it – tell me what this used to be and when you actually started. I mean, if you started thinking about it and acquiring the property some 15 years ago, when did you actually start moving stuff around on this site?
Well, this place originally was built as the Fall City Boat Works, and it was built by the owners of Kingfish and the Fall City Boat Works. They were moved from downtown from the city expanding and doing the Galt House. And the unique part about this property is they were also working on 71, so they invited them to dump all their backfill there, which actually put us up on the levee, hence the name of the other restaurant, but also puts us out of the flood zone. Water will never actually get inside the building, but might not be able to get here. But it's an opportunity not to clean
It'd
up
be a
all
good
that
place to get stuck, right?
Great mess. Yeah, you got food, you got alcohol, you got restrooms, some TV. What else can you ask for, right?
Right.
So, again, I started a project in 2001 and had some investors and had things lined up. And then 9/11 happened and markets kind of crashed a little bit and people really backed off. And a year later, I start to work on the project again, and it just kind of went for a roller coaster back and forth for a couple of years. And I found Veronese on Frankfort Avenue and approached the landlord and said, "Hey, I'm trying to make this thing work. Are you going to work with me or what?" And his response was at that time, it's like, "Oh, you know, I guess things are not right now." He wasn't willing to give it up at, you know, what I was asking for, and I moved on. So fast forward 8 years later at Veronese, 4 years ago, I approached my financial institution, Commonwealth Bank, that helped me with Veronese, and said, "Hey, I got this great project on the river. Would you be interested in doing it?" So it's taken 3 years of planning. We started construction on this site in August of 2015 and just finished up in mid-February and opened up River House. Mid-March, levee will be open, and it's a great spot. Eventually, we're going to grow into it a little more. I have 11,000 square feet on the second floor that I've designed and eventually grow into banquet facilities and utilize, you know, the whole space and this wonderful view. It's 210 feet of riverfront view. There's 23 sliding glass windows with a view, 4,000 square foot patio that I have five fire pits and an outdoor bar and eventually a second outdoor bar, and just many rooms to grow and expand into.
Yeah, it seems like one thing you don't have a shortage of a space here, whereas up on Frankfurt, I guess you're a little more limited. Let's go back and talk about you. And you're from South Carolina, right?
Actually, from Cleveland.
From Cleveland?
Yeah, grew up in Cleveland. I worked at a little mom-and-pop Italian restaurant when I was 13, washing dishes. A month later, he decided to put me in the kitchen and start making salads and pizzas and pastas. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was 16, I was running his kitchen. It was a family-run restaurant, and the family decided to go to Italy for a month and left me and the waitress in charge. And, you know, for me, it was starting to get time to make a decision about college, and I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. My goal in life is creating the financial independence and freedom to make decisions to do what I want, when I want, and how I want to do it.
Sure.
So that's kind of always been the goal, or I guess the catalyst of me doing what I wanted to do. And I enjoyed being in the kitchen, and I enjoyed cooking. It came natural, and I figured I had a head start. So going into college, I had 6 years of experience before attending Johnson & Wales University in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
I received my associates in culinary arts and my bachelor's in food service management. I worked for a great restaurant down there, Magnolia's, which is renowned for their southern cuisine. And in 98, Azalea hired me as her executive chef, so that's what moved me here to Louisville and began my career here.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you in Louisville. It seems like a challenge for, you obviously love the kitchen and you love the cooking or the creating the dishes, I guess, but you're running a business and you got all these employees. It's the balance, I guess, that you is that among your biggest challenges?
It is, and it is a fine balance. You know, you talk about cooking in the kitchen. I always kind of call my kitchen like my playground because I get to invent and be free with things that I do and be artistic. And for me, I always say the kitchen is, it's never the same day twice. The restaurant's not. You always get different curveballs thrown at you, and it's, are you going to hit that pitch and knock it out of the park, or are you going to whiff on it? But you continue to swing at it. And you know, it's a big challenge here because I have a big staff. By summer, we're looking at 150 employees.
Wow.
That's 150 different personalities and personal problems and training. And
exactly.
You know, I say running a restaurant, you have to be versed in a lot of different things besides management. It's accounting and psychology and, you know, math and business. And, you know, there's many different things that you have to be kind of in tune to put the whole package together.
Sure.
and to make it run.
I was looking at the menu as we were waiting, and certainly there's a variety of dishes, a variety of seafood dishes. I'm curious as to, you know, what you created for River House. That, I mean, was it some sort of special dish that you're really proud to be able to serve here?
You know, we really, really like them all. I've been working on this menu for a while and putting things together. You know, part of the influence was that we get such great fresh seafood in Louisville, and a lot of people just don't take advantage of it. And it's sad that some of them that are, you know, doing the seafood kind of business are going to frozen product or prefab product as the economy kind of tightened up a little bit. And I want to take advantage. I have a fishmonger that brings me stuff up from Florida. I get stuff flown in from Honolulu. Mm-hmm. And they call me at noon and at 6 a.m. their time, and they just got everything in from the market, and I have by noon the next day. So that fish was swimming 36 hours ago. I mean, what better can you do with that? And I get people on the coast that can't believe how fresh fish I get, and they say, we don't even get fish that fresh.
Yeah.
So it's great to take advantage of that.
I'm not greatly experienced, but I saw something on your menu I haven't seen in a Louisville restaurant before, which is octopus. What's that about? What's octopus?
I mean, it's great. You know, people that like calamari, it's a little like that, a little more substance to it, meatier. A lot of people don't like octopus because it tends to be a little chewy or a little more tooth to it. And I found a product when I was in Florida on a vacation of this Spanish octopus that comes from these deep waters. And through my education process, the deeper the water, the colder the water, they build a higher fat content. And that fat content lends to a creamier texture. And this stuff is really, really tender. And people that normally don't like octopus is really trying this dish. And they're pretty impressed. So we have a couple things like that on the menu, like grouper cheeks.
Yeah.
You know, people are still even asking about grouper cheeks. And right now, that's my biggest selling product right now.
Wow. I know grouper, but what are grouper cheeks?
It actually comes from the fish's face.
Wow.
And it's a little meat kind of tucked into the cheek area, and a lot of people would just, you know, not use it back in the day, and it's becoming a delicacy with chefs. And what's unique about the meat, it tends to be a little sweeter, and the muscle texture is a little striated differently, kind of almost like string cheese or crab, and you know, it's very similar to that in texture, and people are really enjoying it.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. I know I'm going to come back and sample some of this stuff in the very near future, but thank you again for being on the show and taking a time out of your, you know, it's a really busy time for you, I know, out here.
Yes, it is, and I appreciate you inviting me to be on the show, and I'm having a blast with this and really enjoying it, and can't wait to serve Louisville, my great cuisine, in this beautiful location.
Now that I know a little bit about octopus and about grouper cheeks, I can't wait to go back there. Paula, put it on our calendar. We need to go out to eat at River House in the very near future. And thanks to John for being on the show. Before we get into the rest of the show, I want to talk a little bit about my another sponsor, Ballantine Chocolate Whiskey. My friend Paul Toole is the founder of the company. We had a great party last week called Cocktails with Champions down at O'Shea's, where we served up some different drinks. You know, basically, if you think about chocolate whiskey, it's any drink that you can make with bourbon. It might be a little bit better with a little touch of chocolate in it. On the website, LouisvilleKY.com, you can see a lot of recipes of different Ballantine drinks that you can make at home or order out when you're out on the town and at a place that serves Ballantine. So Ballantine Whiskey, ask for it by name at all around town. All right, so let's get into the rest of the show. I want to talk about a couple of things that are going on in my life. If you missed it this week, I tell you, we had one of the best breakfasts of champions in history. Robbie Ballantine told some great stories. He's really a much better speaker than most people in the audience expected. He drew a big crowd down at the University Club, and we talked about he talked about his family life and some of the struggles that young people have. Robbie is a father of I think 7, he said, or 6, and he's a grandfather. He's only like 52, and he especially talked about his daughter, Brooke, who is a member of the Bellarmine women's basketball team, is doing very well, and about his experience as a parent with her, and she became pregnant. She has a 3-year-old, and you know, Robbie's persevered, and he had a great message of a great positive message for all of us there at the Breakfast of Champions. Had about 40 to 50 people in the crowd, and you should stay tuned. You should come to one if you haven't, and the next one is coming up in May. So that's the Breakfast of Champions. We're also going to have another Cocktails with Champions event also in May. So stay tuned. Follow me on social media, on Facebook and all that, and you'll find out about all this stuff that I get involved with. Another thing I got to do immediately after the Breakfast of Champions on Tuesday morning, the timing was just right. I could walk across the street and saw the new Speed Museum, which is opening this week. They had a special tour thing for media types to go in there on Tuesday morning. I saw Tony Vannetti there, he in a tie nonetheless, doing a report for WHAS TV. I saw a bunch of other folks I knew in there and saw some great art. I posted a picture on Facebook from the Speed, but it's going to be a spectacular addition to our city, a great venue for things like parties, concerts, just gatherings of many types. The new space is spectacular. It's wide open and a lot of air. You know, it's airy. It's got a nice feel to it. It's big. It's not closed in and, you know, I don't know, clammy. Is that the right word for a museum? It's opened up, and a lot of the, as you learned last week, because we had Guillaume Dumière on the show last week, there's a lot of pieces of art that have been in storage for a long time that are now out and available for you to see. And I really like the new section that I saw the other day. It's they come a long way in a week, I'll tell you that, because when I was there the other you know, to interview Gilan. They weren't quite ready, but they are now, and it's all good. So let me. So that was fun. And the other activity I did that was really fun last weekend, or I guess it was Friday night. I went to see a new play at the Humana Festival of New American Plays called Residence. It's nice because these new American plays, I mean, they're my favorite. They're not musicals. They're not, you know, they tell the stories of real life in many cases. And this was a story about a woman staying in a residence inn in I think it was in Arizona. It was in New Mexico or Tucson. It was out west. And she was her job was selling medical equipment, and she was there on her own. And I won't give you the whole story, but she had some issues, and then she met some people who worked at the hotel, and they had their issues, and it's modern, it's real life, it's things that happen to people today. It was said in the present tense, and I really liked it. I wrote a little bit about it on LouisvilleKY.com. Welcome you to go there and see some of Bill Brimer's pictures, and see that there about the Humana Festival. I think we're going to another one on Sunday night. But if you haven't ever checked out the Humana Festival, you really should. It was really great. So what else can we talk about in this section of the show? I wanted to certainly mention the big thing that accomplishes is a long time coming, but the Jefferson Town Chamber and I have been working together to create a podcast that sends out some positive messages, some really good information about the city and what's going on in the city. And we got that one done this week, and you can see that J-Town Chamber podcast. I've got a link to it on LouisvilleKY.com, or go to the J-Town Chamber website. It's going to be a weekly podcast, and I did talk to the mayor, and I'm going to share with you a couple of things that he said, and encourage you to go listen to it. But one of the things I didn't realize until talking with him was that J-Town is playing a leading role in attracting Google and the Google Fiber to the Louisville area. And there are a couple of neighborhoods in J-Town that are going to get it first in the matter of months. And Bill Dieriff, the mayor, has been working hard to make that happen, and he basically got 83 cities to come together and agree on something, which is quite an accomplishment, I think, on anything. So there you go. Mayor Dieriff also talked to me. You're going to hear some news about this in the coming weeks. He's got a plan to do something about the heroin problem. It's going to be what he is doing is going to affect people all over the county, because, you know, this heroin problem and this epidemic is not restricted in any way by income, by race, by geography, anything. So watch for a great new program coming out from the mayor of J-Town. There are some other things going on there. I encourage you to listen to the podcast. I also talked to two of the guys, Greg Hayden and Brian Meinrath, who are two of the owners behind the Third Turn Brewery, a cool, cool place out in J-Town. I encourage you to go out there. You can stop by and see me at my house. I live about a quarter mile away, and it's stumbling home distance, I'll tell you that. And the Third Turn Brewery, it is a cool place. I encourage you to go out there and see that. So other than that, one thing you know, I've been doing is watching, if you got Netflix and you're into politics, you've been doing what I've been doing, which is watching some of the House of Cards. I've been watching, I think I'm on about episode 8. You know, the Netflix releases a whole season at once, so there's a bunch of shows to watch at one time. Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright are the stars of this show. Frank Underwood, Kevin Spacey's character, is the president of the United States, and it's just a very well done program, and I've been spending goofing around a lot of time in front of my TV watching that. You know, it sort of makes you think about government and the things that government do. There's some, the show illustrates some of the ruthless things and some unethical things that people do in politics. You know, it's just a fact of life. Certainly we got a lot of that in our own state government. Governor Bevin took a couple on the chin this week. He released a video that he thought would show that Democrats aren't working very hard on the budget. It sort of backfired on him. And then this week there were a bunch of special elections around the state. There were four. And had the Republicans won all those elections, the the House, which has been controlled by Democrats. I mean, I think always. I don't know if the Republicans ever controlled it. It would have been 50-50, but the Democrats won 3 out of 4 of those, sort of a rejection, because Bevin campaigned for each of those candidates. And, you see a lot of talk on the internet about what all this means and all that. But I choose to think our guest, Mark Murphy, who I hope you follow his cartoons on The Courier. You can watch him in his political cartoons. He posts them on Facebook, and I always see them, and they're just right. And he had a cartoon to the effect of, well, you know, Bevin, you know, quit taking rights away from women, quit being so homophobic, get off all that stuff and govern and be fair. And I know not everybody agrees with that. These are divisive issues. And but the people, when the people speak, you know, you got to interpret something, some meaning from it. And so that's sort of a good thing that came into the political spectrum. I was sort of disappointed the state government also rejected an opportunity to eliminate the death penalty in Kentucky, even though we don't use it, and we haven't used it, I think, in 8 years. It's just there's a lot of flaws in it, depending on where you come out on the death penalty. But I'm not sure you're ever sure. And those people who are and I think the people who are really conflicted are the people that are pro death penalty, but pro life. They don't want abortions, but they want to kill people who've committed heinous crimes. And you know, I understand both sides of that issue. You know where I stand, so we'll just leave it at that. That's what's sort of going on in the political world in Kentucky this week, this first week of March in 2016. Now, I'm going to move on and get to my next guest. Andrew Harris is, I think he's said he's the assistant director. He's the number two guy at Stage One Theater in Louisville, and Stage One is doing some remarkably advanced things. And this Harold and the Purple Crayon we talk about in this show is really a special event. The kids are going to get these tablets to play along. It's sort of an interactive experience going to a play. And for all the school kids, you know, the school buses, it's basically a great time if you're a student and your class gets to go to see a Stage One production. Well, not only do you get out of school, basically, but you also get to have a great experience at the Baumhard Theater. And this one involves, I was especially interested in the interest or the presence of Ben Salee, the local musician who's been on this show. He has an active part. He's going to be there for all the shows. I think that's very impressive. Ben doesn't have to do that. I'm sure he's not getting paid a lot, but it's a great thing for these young people to experience this. And you as an adult can also go to some of the performances. So that's coming up at Stage One. Andrew Harris has a great backstory. I was fascinated. He grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and did not have a great initial experience with theater, but he stuck with it, and persistence paid off, and he was able to create a career in theater. He's been in Louisville 15 years. He's got a great personality, very outgoing, and tells a good story, as you'll hear on my next interview. Here is my talk with Andrew Harris.
No matter how young and healthy you are, life can be full of unpleasant surprises. And without health insurance, even a short hospital stay could set you back thousands of dollars. If you qualify for expanded Medicaid, you can get coverage through Passport Health Plan. Find out if you qualify. Call 855-459-6328 or go online at kynect.ky.gov. Choose Passport, the plan that takes the time to care.
Today we are in the rehearsal hall for Stage One Theater with Andrew Harris. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You were just telling me a story that your entry into theater was caused basically by failure, then another failure, and then an opportunity to work on the lights. So tell me about that. How are you now 15 years into a professional career in theater, and You can look back at strike one, strike two, strike three, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I found theater by accident. Grew up in a small town in Tennessee, and there was this little community theater that had kind of a youth theater program in it, and several of my friends had gotten cast in a play, and for years my mom had said, oh, you ought to go down there. No, I had no interest in that. And then some of my friends were cast in this play, and they got to miss school, and suddenly I went, I like missing school. I should do that. And so I saw in the newspaper they were having an audition, and you know, didn't even tell my parents what I was doing, left, and I went down, and I go into the theater completely, have no clue what I'm doing. I walk in, and they're like, here, fill this out. I'm like, okay, I fill out some form. They usher me into a big theater space with, you know, what felt like a million other people, all who seemed to know what they were doing. And then they called me up on stage. This was an audition for The Wizard of Oz. They called me up on stage and said, okay, what are you going to sing? I went, excuse me? It's important to know that I don't sing. As a matter of fact, I once had a voice teacher tell my mother, you should probably stop wasting your money. So
what did you do with all that money that your mom spent on singing lessons, right?
Well, so they called me up there. I'm like, I don't know. And I blurted out, you know, the only thing that could pop into my head, which was, you know, Amazing Grace. Oh, that's not a good choice. And they're like, great, go. And I butchered it. And unfortunately, you know, I was about 13, 14 years old, so I was old enough to know that I was really humiliating myself. And I got that very cliched, thank you. And I was really frustrated.
We'll call you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, don't call us. I was really frustrated, not at them, I mean, at myself for being unprepared and not knowing to that I needed to know certain things. And so I left frustrated, which, of course, was exacerbated by the fact that all my friends got cast in it. And, oh, we're having cast parties. We're all doing this. And I'm like, I hate you guys. And then, you know, so I waited. And, you know, a couple months later, the next audition comes around. It was The Phantom Tollbooth, not a musical. I checked. So now I'm feeling confident. So I go down. I know I go in. I fill out this form. Great. I walk in here. Great. Now I know what I'm doing. And then they call me up on stage. I'm like, all right, what do I do? And they said, well, what's your monologue? I just went, oh, crap. Of course, I didn't know to prepare a monologue. And some nice kid says, here, quick, read this. And what he handed me was an excerpt from T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which is the poems that the musical Cats is based on. And it's like, you know, Dr. Seuss for adults, or Jellicle Cats. And I'm like, I don't even know. Is this English? And I butchered that. And, you know, I heard the person in charge give that sharp intake of breath, you know, and I just finished the sentence for him. Thank you. Yes. And I walked out. But a nice guy who worked at the theater on the technical side remembered my previous epic failure. And so he followed me. And then he said, you know, hey, hang on a second. I said, yeah. He goes, how would you like to work on the lights for the show? So I gave him a very serious look. And I said, do I get to miss school? And he said, you do. I said, sign me up. So that was my first experience in theater. And then, you know, when the next audition came around, which was Treasure Island, you know, this time I was prepared. I had my monologue ready. It's not a musical. I checked again. And I had my, you know, pirate voice ready and everything. And so ended up cast as a pirate. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. And I've been doing theater ever since.
Wow. And doing great here. Now, you described stage one to me as sort of like, I mean, we're right in the middle of the Humana Festival, mm-hmm. New American Plays. It's all great. I went to see one the other night. But this is sort of Actors Theater for kids, right?
Sure. I mean, in our community, that's one of the best ways to explain it, because when you talk about stage one, you know, we're what's called a professional theater for young audiences. And if you don't know what that means, people are like, well, does that mean you have kids performing, or are you performing for kids? What does that mean? Well, we are a professional theater, so you have the same caliber of actors that you're going to have at Actors Theater. You've got the same level of, you know, design and technical support that goes into it. The only difference is that the plays that we do from a content standpoint are appropriate for students K-12. Okay. So we have different audiences, and, you know, people are like, well, oh, that's great. And I said, you know, another great way to think of it is there's really no difference between, you know, looking at theater for young audiences, or, you know, the kind of theater they do at Actors Theater. I say, really, the way you have to look at it is there's really only two kinds of theater, good theater and bad theater. Mm-hmm. We do good theater. It just happens to be for kids.
All right, and the side benefit, I guess, is you get to be the guy that gets kids out of school.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Sometimes we do what's called age-appropriate casting. So, you know, if we have student roles, or, you know, young people in plays, we'll actually cast students to work alongside with the professional adult actors. And one of the things I always tell them is the great thing about working with us is you get treated like a professional. You know, the worst thing about working with us is that you get treated like a professional. And so we have high expectations. And yes, and we double cast our shows when you have students in them, because when we do a show, it may run, you know, 40, 45, 50 performances.
Wow.
Because, you know, we do four main stage shows a year. And throughout those four shows, we have about, you know, 80,000 kids a year that are coming through and seeing our stuff.
Wow. That's
so,
a lot.
So we get them out of school.
Okay. And you were telling me an interesting story about the Baumhart Theater, which is where you perform.
Sure.
Now, I'm used to going down there just like I just a month or two ago saw Paul Thorne perform there. It was really great. I love the theater. I love the stage. Yeah. I love the seating, the way it goes up like
sure.
that. And tell me about how that was really created for a young audience.
Absolutely. Actually, when the Kentucky Center was built, it was built, the Baumhart Theater specifically was built for Stage 1 to be the primary user of. So it's got stadium seating, 615-seat theater with stadium seating. Of course, this was back before stadium was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed that way because it was designed so that a kindergartner could see over the head of an adult. And at no point, even at your farthest point in the theater, you're never more than 50 feet from the stage. So it was really built for a young audience in mind and for Stage 1 to be that primary user of. And, you know, we're a great partner. Kentucky Center is a great partner. And we're kind of the perfect tenant because most of our shows are student matinees, and we use the theater at 10 and 12 in
the
afternoon,
yeah.
which leaves it available to be used tonight. So, you know, it's kind of a nice relationship between us and the Kentucky Center.
Well, yeah, they do have some great events in that theater.
Absolutely.
I haven't been to Stage 1 performance, but like even the Idea Festival has all its stuff there,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really great venue. But you are pretty excited about this current production that's going
mm-hmm.
on, involving something to do with a writing utensil that's a specific color, right?
Absolutely. We're currently in the process of doing a world premiere piece. So this is a new piece that we're developing on the classic children's book, Harold and the Purple Crayon. Of course, that book's been around for years and years and years. And it's about a little boy, Harold, who, you know, one day gets up with his crayon and his blue pajamas and goes out with his purple crayon and draws himself in and out of, you know, trouble. And it's all about just how, you know, the world that comes out of his imagination. And so we looked at this story. It's a real simple story. And we thought, well, you know, this is kind of fun. I wonder if we could do something with this. Now, when you think of a kind of a traditional narrative, Harold never talks. And so we got to thinking about this. What could we do with this story? And what we've conceived of is really a very non-traditional theater experience, because rather than building just a straight narrative, since Harold never speaks, we have a dancer, you know, kind of a movement specialist who plays the role of Harold. And as Harold is drawing, we represent that drawing through animation.
Hmm.
So we've incorporated, you know, projection screens into the set design and built animation. And so now you have a dancer mover interacting with animation, and we have, if you're going to have a dancer on stage, you have to have music, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we've hired cellist Ben Solee to, who's, you know, well known in this community.
I know. He's been on the Rusty Satellite Show.
So, well, Ben is not only composing the original music for the show, he was so excited about the project that he is playing every show live. He's a character on stage.
Wow.
With Harold. So he's on stage. So you have this musician playing. You've got Harold as a dancer. And then we have another character who's kind of our storyteller, our reader, who in some cases is reading the book, and he's also interacting with the audience, because we've got technology in the form of animation. But, you know, one of the challenges today, you know, parents are always lamenting the fact that kids are spending all their time with their faces, you know, buried in screens, and, you know, how do we get their faces out of the screens? And so as we conceived of this, producing artistic director Peter Holloway and I were talking about, thought, well, what if instead of getting their faces out of the screens, what if we use that? And so what we've done is we've incorporated technology on another level, wherein every student who comes to see the show is going to get a tablet. So
okay.
They're going to have a tablet that's going to be assigned to them as they come in. And throughout the show, that reader, that kind of narrator who guides us through this story, at different times is going to invite the students to be able to draw along with Harold. So they're using their own imagination. And while it may not be a purple crayon, You know, they've got their finger in that tablet, and they're going to be able to, just like Harold, use their imagination to show how they would interact with things. And we're also able to build some other fun moments in. You know, they're going to be able to play some sound through there. So, you know, it's nighttime, and we need some crickets. What happens if you have 600 crickets all playing through tablets throughout the house? And so we're really kind of doing this non-traditional theater piece where we're incorporating movement and music and animation and technology into this kind of hybrid experience. It's something we're really excited about.
Well, that sounds very unique in terms of the tablets, I can't imagine. And obviously the kids get to take tablets home when they're done.
No, they don't actually get to do that. We've had a partner who has worked with us to provide the tablets. And, you know, once the show's over, the tablets, we're going to make sure, you know, at stage one, education's a big role, plays a big role in everything we do. So those tablets are going to have life beyond us, where they're going to go out and help people who maybe don't have as readily available access to that kind of technology. So.
Okay. Well, this performance, I mean, it sounds very exciting. I'm guessing, I know a lot of the performances are set in the daytime for kids to come on school field trips and all that, but regular folks like me can come.
Absolutely. You know, the bulk of our shows are student matinees. And so, you know, if you've ever seen the yellow school buses in front of the Kentucky Center, that's probably kids coming to see a stage one performance. You know, we've got about 80,000 kids a year come through there. But we also do Saturday public performances so that other people in the community can come back and see it. Or if those students go home and had a great time and they want to bring mom and dad back, they can come and check it out. So, yeah, absolutely. We make sure that everybody in the community who wants to have access to, as I said, good theater has the ability to do so.
Good theater. And you've got some special events coming up. As we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to invite people to those.
So we've got a big event on our opening event, Paint the Town Purple. We're a big opening night event for Harold and the Purple Crown. That's coming up soon on the 19th. And so, you know, there's information on our website about it, but there are tickets available that allow you to come. There's pre-show activities, there's the show itself, and then after the show, there's a reception and a dinner event taking place next door at the Ali Center. So that's going to be a really tremendous event. And then we also have a fundraiser on, I believe it's the 23rd at Gordon Biersch, where they're going to tap a new brew specifically for stage one.
Tell me, purple beer.
So, well, you know, you're gonna have to show up and find out. But you know, anybody who wants to come down to that, it's I believe from 6 to 9, and they're gonna have this new brew. And if you sample that, then part of those proceeds go back to supporting stage one, and all of that money that we get is gonna go back to underwriting kids to come who can't afford it to come and see our shows.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Looking forward to Harold and Purple Crayon, obviously, and all the good work you're doing down here, Andrew.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We love being a part of the community here. It's a wonderful place to tell stories to young people.
My next goal, I guess, is to find a way to get in to see Harold and the Purple Crayon down at the Baumhard Theater with Stage One. Sounds like a really great event, and they've got some preview events coming up that I know there's one with a big ticket prize, a fundraiser. I'd really like to go to that, so that would be fun. But anyway, that's going to do it for this show, this episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. I really enjoyed talking with my guest this week, Chef John Veronese down at River House. I'm going to be going back to visit him in the very near future and sample some octopus or what was it? Grouper cheeks. That's right, grouper cheeks. So I suggest you get down there. I know there's going to be big crowds, but it sounds like a great deal. And in the spring, if the levee gets open, that'll be a great sort of hangout place. So thanks to those guests. I really want to thank the people that helped me out in doing this show. Bill Breimer, he went to both interviews with me. There's some great photos on LouisvilleKY.com and RustySatelliteShow.com of Andrew and John. In their environments, it's great to have Bill along for that. Jackie Bentley posts a lot of the stories you see on LouisvilleKY.com. I really appreciate her help, and Dan Vonderheide helped me put together not only this show but this week's premiere episode of the Jefferson Town Chamber podcast, which you can find online either at LouisvilleKY.com or JTownChamber.com. I've got some sponsors to thank. Certainly, Passport Health Plan. The Eye Care Institute and Ballantine Chocolate Whiskey all contribute to making this show possible. Thank them very much. And until next week, which will be St. Patrick's Week, I'll be back with some very exciting guests that you will not want to miss. It'll be more of the most interesting people in the Ville on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.